Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.
KYW Original Podcasts.
It's just a good conversation with somebody that you didn't know you were interested in. I'm Matt Leon, and this is One on One.
When you put things in perspective, it's a good thing. Mm-hmm. You get to the Final Four is a good thing, but when you've done something beyond that, you want more. I think we were all on the same page. We were hungry. It's something I'll always remember, and I think everybody on that team will remember.
And our guest this week, Tina Sloan Green, just a Philadelphia legend, one of the great women's lacrosse coaches really in American history, was phenomenal at Temple, also coached field hockey there, co-founder of the Black Women in Sports Foundation, and we are honored to have you in here. Thanks so much for coming by.
You're so welcome. Thank you.
Let's start with the co-founder of the Black Women in Sports Foundation. For people that aren't familiar, talk about the foundation, its mission, its work.
Well, the mission of the Black Women in Sports Foundation is to increase opportunities for black girls, girls of color, from the playing field to the boardroom. And through offering clinics and in schools and after school programs and in recreation centers, and we partner with so many folks, not only here in Philadelphia, but in New York and Tennessee, and my co-founders, Nikki Frank, Alpha Alexander. They were students at Temple when I got to Temple, and Linda Green was in the law school at Temple. So it was historically founded because of the fact that when Carol Oglesby came after my second year at Temple, we'd never see anybody that looked like us at these various seminars and whatever. So we decided we're going to do something about this. So my first seminar was actually a continuing education program. My coworker, Robert Lehay, he was in charge of continuing education. So we started a continuing education program, invited the teachers in the school district, and my husband knew some, you know, folks in the historically black schools in the South, you know, Dorothy Ritchie, and you know, all these folks, you know, were, you know, came to help create our first seminar, and then it just grew from there. Through our work, we've seen have tremendous, tremendous outcomes. But unfortunately, as the sports grew, like tennis and lacrosse and whatever, money becomes an issue because, you know, these sports are attracting dollars and cents and TV and all this stuff. So our work is just beginning now because of the fact that they see sport is not as a necessity in our public schools and in our recreation centers. It's a pay-to-play environment. Although I thought that the foundation would not be needed at this particular point, needed more than ever in order to make sure that girls of color have the same opportunities that I had, that my children had. The pay-to-play, we pay taxes. I mean, Philadelphia is not a broke school district. You know, it's just how you want to spend your money. So leadership, the leadership in the schools, the leadership in parks and recreation, the leadership in the Boys and Girls Clubs, the leadership in the Salvation Army, we've all got to collaborate, you know, for the mission of inclusiveness. And they talk about diversity and inclusion. Who's not included? You know, look who's not included. And let's do things to make sure that those people who are not included are included. That's the mission of the Black Women's Sports Foundation, to make sure that girls of color, Black girls, and women of color have the opportunity to participate in all sports, from the playing field to the boardroom.
Let's talk about the impact of sports on your life. You grew up in Philadelphia Eastwick section,
yes,
correct?
Yes.
Sports, as far as you, as early as you can remember, always a part of your life?
Well, if you know Eastwick, you know, it's like the country in the city. You know, we had open space, and my school, Alice Carey School, was a two blocks away. I walked to school, walked home for lunch. We never had any organized sports, but we would, you know, play kickball and sit on the stoop and, you know, hopscotch, jump rope, but nothing organized. Even at Alice Carey, we never had a gym teacher or anything like that. My first exposure to sport was when I was advised to go to Girls High, and that changed my life, because at Girls High we had a variety of activities, including sports and the arts, and I mean, you name it, we had it. In fact, had it not been for sport, I probably would have left after a month and went back to my home school at Bartram, because at Alice Carey there were 13 people in my graduating class.
Wow.
You know, I had to commute from my first experience, that was at Masterman right here, you know, on Spring Garden Street. Then the school moved to Broad and Olney. But had it not been for the gym teacher, Miss Weissenhofer, back in the day, I keep telling these young people, back in the day, if the teacher told you to do something, there was no ifs, ands, and buts
right.
about it. You just did it. So she said, Sloan, you should come out for the field hockey team. I had never seen field hockey in my life, but again, because she told me to come out for the team, I did. You know, I enjoyed it. I found that I was good at it. And then the next thing you know, I was, you know, out for the basketball team. And then, you know, I was behind in everything. These girls were brilliant. You know, the former president of Penn, Judy Roden, was in my homeroom. You know, they had all the academics that I didn't have. But from the support of the athletic, the staff, tutoring, and all that, I eventually caught up, and never to the level that some of these young ladies that I was going to school with. But I found that I was good in something. My expertise was the sports. I was good at playing the basketball and, you know, et cetera. So, you know, that gave me, you know, a sense of belonging.
So you say you felt you were good. When do you start realizing that, when it comes to like field hockey, lacrosse, and stuff, that you're starting to separate yourself from the other kids? Like, there's good, and then there's, I can take this further than most people. Was there an aha moment, or was it just kind of a gradual, you started to get more attention, and it just kind of grew?
Yeah, it was gradual, but again, when I think back, we were actually practicing our craft, you know, in ninth and 10th grade, because I was in the leaders club, and we helped the teachers out. And back then, I thought going to Girls High, I thought you really had to be good at what you did. You had to be outstanding. And so I thought that the thing that I was most outstanding was a sport. So it was just natural for me to want to be a physical education teacher and coach. And my parents didn't go to college, so Ms. Weissenhofer again advised me to go to Westchester. At that particular time, Temple was de-emphasizing phys ed. You know, they were wanting to become more of a research institution. They advised me to go to Westchester. I did. And again, had no idea. They had never played lacrosse in my entire life. I'd never even seen the game. And the teachers, I went out for field hockey. Back in the day, before Vonnie Groh came, the field hockey coach told me she divided, put all the suburban girls on one side and the city girls on the other side. You know, I was on the third and fourth team, and the others on the first and second team. But I was having fun, you know, and I was commuting the first year, so it gave me a sense of belonging. And thank God, Vonnie Groh, and I think, you know, one of the, if not the best, coach in the world at that particular time, became the coach at Westchester. And not only my coach, but my teacher as well. So we had to, all of us took classes together. My classmates were unbelievable, you know, as far as their passion for sport and their ability to perform the sport, but also be interested in the coaching and the phys ed as well. You know, I was told to come out for the lacrosse team. I did, and the rest is history.
So college, that's your first
exposure to
the game.
Right, to the game.
Wow.
Yeah.
But, did it feel comfortable right away? I mean, not just from a sports standpoint, but from a wow, this is fun, and I'm good at this. Like,
oh yeah, I mean, I never dreamed that I would be on, you know, the national team. You know, at 4 o'clock or 3 o'clock, I would run down the field after seeing my soap operas. You know, I'd be there on time, but I see my soap operas first. But then after I started going out for the, they started exposing me to these other folks on the teams and going to the all college, you know, situations with field hockey. I began to compare my abilities with these other folks. I said, I'm just as good as this person. I'm just as good as that person. So I began to, because of the ability to compete, the opportunity to compete against others, I began to realize just how, you know, good I could be.
Your career at Westchester, that leads you to playing for the U.S. women's field hockey and women's lacrosse teams. Am I correct?
Right. I made the... I think the all-college field hockey team at Westchester. And then after attending Westchester, when we were all coaches and teachers and whatever, I continued to play. And I made the, you know, all the district lacrosse team. And then it just went on to make the United States team.
And first African-American in both cases or just field hockey?
In lacrosse, I was the
okay.
first. I'm not so sure about, you know, about field hockey, but lacrosse, yes.
Did you look at it? It's an honor. Did you realize at that young age the being the first African American, or do you look at it more just as I'm playing on this team?
No, I looked at it as I'm the first. Everybody's looking at me. You know, I'm representing, and I got to represent. I can't mess up. My whole goal is I never wanted to be the only. I wanted to bring people along with me because it takes the pressure off of you. you stick out. You know, what you do, I had another young lady that played field hockey with me. We were with two of us. And normally Westchester recruited, you know, two black females and two black males in each class. It was sort of like a quota system. We knew we had to represent. You know, we knew it.
How much pressure does that add to you at every level? Or did you not think of it in that way?
I didn't think of it as pressure. And I was thinking about it this morning. In a way, when I got the job at Temple, nobody expected us to do anything. In a way, that was a blessing. I would sit in meetings and they would talk all around us, like thinking that, you know, we were not even in the mix. That spotlight, not having that pressure on you, being the underdog to me was actually sometimes a blessing. But nobody really knows that internal fight that you have. And you have to sit there and you listen to this stuff and you go around and see what's going on and what's not going on. So I think that instilled a sense of determination in me, but also determination in the young ladies that I coached as well.
So what was the experience of playing for the U.S. team like? A lot of travel, a lot of all over the globe, or what was it like?
I was, you know, I had the opportunity to go to Australia and Japan, and also had an opportunity to go to 2 months, spent 2 months in Great Britain. And going to Australia and Japan, we were the first ones to, that group of folks, that was a combined team, I think it was with the British, to go over there and really start the game of lacrosse. At the time, you know, I didn't realize how, you know, significant it was, but it was a significant moment. And actually, I was treated in Australia like a queen because it was a strange type of environment. They welcomed me, but as long as you're a visitor, you can't stay there, but as long as you're a visitor. So everybody wanted to house me, and I mean, and back in those days, you would stay with families. And my experience in Great Britain was just the opposite. In England, where you knew that, you know, who wants to house her? I had some great teammates and who they were supportive. I mean, I don't think they ever knew what things that I was going through,
right,
because they were in the majority. But we had fun. I missed being home because that was the first time I'd been away from home that long. But looking back, it was a tremendous, you know, experience, and I guess it prepared me for what I was going to face in days to come, trying to build a program and trying to, you know, create a, you know, family environment for my children and my grandchildren.
Was coaching always something that was on your radar once your playing days were over? I would like to pursue this, or was it something that kind of just the opportunity presented itself and you jumped at it?
No, like I said, after going through girls' high, and I was thinking you had to be really, really good at what you did. Mm-hmm. That's why I stood out, and I knew that that was where my passion was, where my expertise was. So the sports that we were in were elite sports, and I thank God for my classmates like Marcia Johnson and Patty Boldinger, because we never got a chance to go to the elite camps, the coach in the summertime. So we started our own camp. I was teaching at, actually working at the YWCA in Chester, and met some folks who gave us the opportunity to start a camp in Upland, Pennsylvania. That was our first camp. And all my classmates came out to help, and actually that they helped me create the Temple University pipeline for outstanding underserved athletes, really.
If my timeline is correct, you start coaching and teaching in high school, and then you get the opportunity to coach basketball and cheerleading at Lincoln,
yes,
correct?
Mm-hmm.
And that eventually leads to, how did the door to Temple open to become the head coach of lacrosse and field hockey there?
Well, once I left Westchester, my first job, I really wanted to teach in the city, but in those days, Westchester students did not teach in the city, just Temple. You know, that was a Temple area. And so my first job was at Unionville, Chadsport. And that was quite an experience because I was the first African-American teacher at Unionville. From there, I had opportunity to get a chance to learn a different culture, really, because the young people there were just so involved in their animals and, you know, it's just a different lifestyle.
Right. No, absolutely.
A different lifestyle. However, it was also a really, really tumultuous environment, because that's when Martin Luther King had come to the school, and at that particular time, that's when he got shot. And it was just it was an emotional period for me. And I knew I had to, I'd spent 2 years, I had to go back to the city. I wanted to go back to the city. Unfortunately, my Miss Weiss and I had started at William Penn in the city, so I got a chance to, you know, work with her and get another type of experience there. Then also, I got to Lincoln because my sorority is Delta Sigma Theta, and when I was at Westchester, I had pledged Delta Sigma Theta, and it was a combined pledge group. It was young ladies from Westchester, young ladies from Cheney, young ladies from Lincoln, and it so happens that my soror at Lincoln University was Carol Black, who was the first female at Lincoln, because Lincoln used to be an all-male school. She was the first female there. She called me one day and said, you know, Tina, they're looking for, you know, a PE teacher here at Lincoln. They had one, but they wanted somebody else there as well. So she told me about the job, and that was really, really an experience for me, because all my days at Girls High, my days at Westchester, I had never had seen a black coach or a black teacher at Girls High. So this was an experience to see all these black folks in very significant roles, and, you know, Mr. Revere and Mr. Gardner. I mean, these were men who were outstanding in their fields. And Floyd Lazier, and he was the basketball coach at Lincoln at the time, and John Cheney and Vivian Stringer were at Cheney. So I got a chance to see excellence in our own field, you know, and with people that looked like me, who came from, you know, various backgrounds, but they had achieved and made a difference. Then also I saw different types of African-American students. You know, some came from very, very affluent backgrounds, and some came from not so affluent backgrounds. But it gave me an opportunity to see the cultural differences that existed within our own community, and I could appreciate that. And it was the social life that I'd never been exposed to. And I was able to, that's how I actually met my husband, because he's a Tuskegee grad, and he was interested in sport. They would come up to, and I had friends who were, involved in social work, and he was a social worker. So, you know, it all tied in. So after my experience at Lincoln, it just so happened that Marvin Wachman was the president. At a particular time, Temple was going through some very, very tough times, because the students were rioting because there were no African-American teachers. This was the early 70s. And I really credit the students at Temple University for giving me the opportunity to actually, you know, teach and coach there, because had they not been involved, you know, I probably would not have qualified. Because of my activity at Lincoln, I qualified to be there because I had 4 years coaching experience. Plus, Marvin Wachman, in the meantime, had gone to Temple because they needed somebody who had some experiences with dealing with, African American culture. So that was helpful in my, getting the opportunity to get the job. And I thought it was a great opportunity here. I could coach field hockey, lacrosse, badminton, and teach 6 credits and start a coaching program, all for $11,000. That was an opportunity back then.
Now, were field hockey and lacrosse specifically, were they club programs when you took over, or had they just gone varsity?
Well, then no, they were. Field hockey was always big. That was okay. You know, but lacrosse was, the level of lacrosse was very, very low. I had to run around and get.
You're basically starting.
Yeah, starting from
scratch.
Go to the sororities and beg the young ladies to come out for the team. But so lacrosse wasn't as lacrosse wasn't as big nationally either. You know,
right? No, it's a different world now.
Right. But the difference, I think, between field hockey and lacrosse was the fact that the men understood lacrosse. Men played lacrosse. Lot of American men did not play field hockey. So in that respect, it was easy for them to understand the possibilities in the game. So that was helpful.
How difficult was it juggling 3 sports, including the badminton, or was it just, this is my job and, you know, got to do it?
I still think that, you know, the field hockey and lacrosse, field hockey was in the fall, and then in between had the badminton, and then lacrosse was in the spring. And a lot of my athletes did both sports. And when I look back, I don't think that was a bad idea, because, you know, you get tired of doing the same thing over right. and over and over again, having to, you know, that one sport year round. However, as we got better and the systems changed, because then you wanted, the folks wanted to have concentration in field hockey, concentration in lacrosse, you know, that made a difference, mm-hmm. you know. But initially, you know, if you're passionate about what you're doing, you enjoy it. To me, I loved doing what I was doing. So the badminton was a little bit, they sort of got rid of the badminton piece, because on the national level, badminton wasn't that, you know,
right.
important. But field hockey and lacrosse remained, you know, NCAA sports. So that made a big difference.
So specifically, you have success with field hockey, but the lacrosse, I mean, you just take it to a whole nother level. How long did it take you? I know you won the first national title, and it wasn't NCAA yet. It was still AIAW, mm-hmm, the first mm-hmm. one in 82.
Right.
But how long did it take for you to get the program to a point where you're like, we can compete with anyone?
Well, I think about 5 years.
Okay.
You know, the biggest difference, those scholarships made the biggest difference. We were given one scholarship. And I used to laugh, because the the guys would say, oh, you don't want to get involved in scholarships. This creates a problem. But, you know, and I'm looking at them. And this is what really changed the dynamics, because Carol Sape from Boyertown, she was one of the first scholarship recipients. And, you know, to give her to play field hockey and lacrosse for that and to pay her tuition, that was a big thing. You know, a lot of them were never exposed to the city, never exposed to, a black coach. But the scholarship was the thing that was interesting to parents and to them.
Right.
Also, I pride, I have to credit the fact that my assistant coaches, I always made sure that I chose people who understood and who were white, understood the culture, because initially, you know, the parents had, you know, problems with, you know, relating to me, because many of them had never even been around a black person before. But after, you know, we got to know who I was, and same thing with the athletes. But our team, it was a team environment as far as our coaching teams were concerned.
So let's go to 82 when you win that first title. Is that a year going into that season? Do you think, like, you know, well, we're good enough where we've got a shot at winning this thing? Or is it almost too big, a national title, is that almost too big when you haven't done it before to think in those terms?
Yeah, you know, I guess, again, being an underdog is sometimes a good thing. And again, nobody expected anything of us. You know, looking back, I'm telling them that, my athletes, that they don't expect us to do anything. So what do you have to lose? Just go out there and put it to them. And we were, I guess, non-traditional in many respects as far as our playing was concerned. My coaches, you know, they brought in innovative ideas, and we had athletes who not only were skilled, but they also had that heart, you know, and I think that's a big part of it, the willingness to you want to win, and that toughness. Looking back, that first group was unbelievable, and a lot of stuff happens off the field, and so we had tremendous leadership off the field in our captains. But sometimes the captains aren't really the leaders. There's other people on the team that are leaders as well. It was a tremendous victory, not only for the athletes, but the school, the community, and personally, you know, for me in the profession that I was in.
We have to take a break now on One-on-One. More with Tina Sloan Green right after this.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast. They're on a journey through breweries and watering holes throughout the region.
It actually tastes like apple pie in a glass.
Okay, I'm getting it now. Now I'm getting the pie.
John McDevitt and Paul Kurtz are the Beer and Booze Bros. Don't miss any of their podcasts.
That's all I need, another addiction.
On the radio.com app or wherever you get your podcasts.
We are back with legendary former Temple women's lacrosse head coach Tina Sloan Green on One-on-One. So you mentioned, you know, the idea of being an underdog and got nothing to lose. Mm-hmm. You win a title, that's a hard card to play. Mm-hmm. And how did it change the way you approach things after you have a title? Because then all of a sudden, everybody knows when you're coming to town, when you're on the schedule, stuff like that. Did it have to change the way you approach things?
It didn't change the way we approach things, but it got tougher because people then knew that you were had arrived.
Temple's big now. It's right.
So they didn't take you for granted anymore, And plus, I think sometimes the athletes, you know, they begin to, we start getting, you know, better athletes. But again, you have to go through some things to, you know, just that doesn't happen. We got to the Final Fours, you know, what, 11 consecutive times.
Right.
But in 84 and 88, we actually won. But for many, in that 88 team, you know, that was unbelievable because the year before that, they had gone to the finals and lost, and they had to spend a whole year thinking about those losses. It's tough when you're expected to be good. When you're not expected, it's not as tough. And I think that's what's great about sport as a team, behind the fields and behind the scenes, as coaches, we had to work together to figure out how we're going to do this. But we had the opportunity to do it. And the opportunity to, and all, it's all about winning, and then we're going to get respect if we win. That's what the game's all about. But also, they were good academic folks as well. We had folks who were going and wanted to be doctors, they wanted to be teachers, they wanted to be lawyers. So we never negated the fact that they were there for an education as well. But we also recognized that they wanted to compete, and that was important. And they loved the sport.
And you mentioned that 88 season. I mean, you guys were a buzzsaw. I think 19-0 ended up beating Penn State in the title game.
Mm-hmm.
What is it like to be in the middle of something like that? You have the program at a point where you're elite, but you are, this is special. This doesn't, undefeated, stuff like this doesn't happen. In the moment, do you realize it, or is it the grind of who's next practice, stuff like that? And then when it's over and you won, you're like, my goodness, this was exquisite. What is that dynamic like through that season?
It's indescribable because, like I said, the year before, they got to that point, a lot of those same players, the seniors, had got to that point, won every game, and then lost in the finals. So they had to spend a whole year dealing with that. And we as coaches had to spend a whole year dealing with that. When you put things in perspective, you know, to get to the final, it's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
To get to the Final Four is a good thing. But when you've done something beyond that, you want more. And I think we were all on the same page that we were hungry. And we knew how good Penn State was. You know, they were our nemesis from the beginning. It was something, I guess, contagious about that group. Off the field and on the field, they were determined that they're going to leave on top this year. So our staff and our parents and the school, President Leocoris, they were all, John Chaney, the whole school was, you know, involved. And the finals were at Swarthmore, so we were almost home.
Right.
So it was... It was tremendous. It was tremendous. Something I'll always remember, and I think everybody on that team will remember.
Let's take it back to kind of your mission with Black Women in Sports Foundation. What do you think of the progress that's been made to this point? Because specifically, like with field hockey and lacrosse, the numbers of African Americans taking part pretty low.
Yes.
What do you attribute that to, and how far have you come?
I think the foundation, we were at the ground level of every movement. And, you know, when I saw a lot of progress in the beginning, and I really thought, you know, about 20 years ago that we wouldn't even need the foundation at this point. But now I find we need it more than ever because of the fact that these sports like field hockey and lacrosse and tennis and whatever, they're lucrative. You know, when you look at lacrosse, the fastest growing sport in the country, and the championships are bringing a lot of revenue to the school. Everything's being televised, so the whole dynamics has changed. It's become more of a pay to play. In order to be involved in sports, even like in basketball, you know, you have to go to certain camps and you have to.
Travel teams,
and that's very expensive. My kids were involved in tennis, And had it not been for the NYSP program and my daughter getting involved and being recognized in tennis and then being able to make the junior team, I wouldn't have been able to afford to send her to all those events so that she'd be seen. Progress has been made. And then when you look at the numbers, I mean, like I told you, I never wanted to be the only. So when I look back, and then I'm still not seeing significant number of females, people of color, involved in the business of sport. Thank God for historically black schools, because you had the Nell Jacksons in the past, and the folks at Tennessee State and the Althea Gibsons and all that, but they were predominantly from historically black schools. Now the sport, a lot of the talent, the African American talent, in the suburbs, were going to predominantly white schools. So I look at it as right now is the sports like lacrosse and field hockey and tennis, they need Black Men's Sport Foundation more than ever, because we've had proven success and our methods have been proven that we can change the dynamics of a sport like field hockey, like lacrosse, like tennis. I think sport is a great vehicle to bring about integration, and I think that's a good thing. Irregardless of where you come from, irregardless of what your financial capabilities are, if you can participate in sport along with in your schools or in your recreation centers, along with people who are diverse, it brings about a different type of dynamics. And and I think that in the city now, what's happening is that people are coming back from the suburbs into the city. So you have these millennials who want to bring their kids up in public schools because they can't afford to be paying all the money for the private schools. So they're looking at improving the schools and bringing about diversity, which I think is a good thing. So I'm looking at the parks and recreation as being critical for sports like tennis, lacrosse, field hockey, golf. Because the fact that you need facilities, and I'm saying to all the politicians, we need great facilities in our black communities, in our underserved communities. We deserve it. We deserve to have bathrooms, next to the tennis courts, at 33rd Street. Why should we go play tennis and have to, women have to go to the bathroom behind a bush? Penn has a great facility, a tennis facility, and they also have, bathrooms right there so you can go to the bathroom. Right now, I think there's an opportunity, especially for the foundation, to bring about a cohesiveness amongst, folks from various backgrounds, from various countries, from various economic backgrounds, et cetera. And I think the sport and the arts are the vehicle that through which we can do this. However, leadership is important. We've got to have leaders who believe that integration is a good thing. They believe that historically black schools play a role in development in Pennsylvania. Believe that kids, irregardless of where they come from, should have the opportunity to participate in all kinds of sports. Believe that the schools should be quality schools with quality bathrooms and quality gyms, and kids should be able to go to a cafeteria and get a decent meal. These are the things that we're advocating for through the Black Men's Sport Foundation. But we also have people who've come through. I taught a course called Racism in Athletics at Temple, and see a lot of my students now, who are now in their 40s and their 50s, and they're doing good things. But in that particular class, we used to debate, because for some of them, that was the first time where they actually got a chance to talk about race. The whole thing about it is we've got to start discussing, we've got to start debating, And that gave them an opportunity to debate, but also gave them an opportunity to visit schools, be able to intern in situations where they weren't the majority. And they find out that these kids are just like anybody else, you know. But again, it was the opportunity to learn, to debate, and to be around folks in the leadership roles who had anticipated that great things out of everybody, in regards, though they don't put stereotype a person.
So final question, your career so magnificent at the cusp of so many things. We didn't even mention when you took over at Temple, you were the first African-American women's lacrosse coach ever at the collegiate level. How do you look at your life and career and athletics? I know there's still work to do, but when you look at all you've accomplished, all you've done, how do you look at it?
Well, you know, I thank God, you know, for first of all giving me parents who believed in God and the church and whatever, because that gave me a willpower, which I think has kept me going, and it still keeps me going, because, you know, it's that something beyond you is making you do the things that you do. And so I look at my career, and I look at some of the things I've done, and I'm thankful for my athletes, and it's so overwhelmingly pleasing for me to get a call from one of my athletes or something on email or whatever. I mean, those are the things that touch your heart. And I have a 8-month-old granddaughter now, and I'm hopeful that she'll have the same opportunities that I had and my children had, and only because of Temple, their exposure to Temple and college and all that kind of stuff, and my husband's relationship with Tuskegee, that they were able to get the opportunities that they have. And never would I have thought, when I look at my children, never would I have thought that my daughter would be the first African-American head coach at Harvard University. That wasn't the intent. We were just giving her the opportunity to play a variety of sports, to go to private school, and give us an opportunity to hang around them, because, you know, kids get into trouble. So, you know, the sports give you an opportunity to hang around your children, you know, and know who they're hanging around with. So I'm just thankful that I had the opportunity and that I'm still around at 75 to appreciate the outcomes.
Tina Sloan Green, thank you so much for stopping by and talking with us.
You're so welcome. Thank you.
That'll do it for this week's show. One-on-One is an original sports podcast from KYW News Radio. If you like what we do and want to help us out, make sure you are subscribed so you don't miss an episode. And you can help more people find out about the podcast by finding the show on Apple Podcasts and leaving a rating and a review. You can follow the show on Twitter at One-on-One Pod, and you can follow me on Twitter at MattLeon1060. Many thanks to Tina Sloan Green for joining us this week. My name is Matt Leon. Come back next week for another good conversation with someone you should know more about.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.